Nobody else has been talking about this, and here it is. By the way, the only place that did not talk about this that I found in the last 48 hours, the only place that is not talking about it is the Detroit media. I was looking around to find out if local Detroit media stations were talking about it. There's only a couple that are saying anything about it, and they're not going in. This should be big, 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 big news. But the local media in Detroit, the Detroit Free Press, is not talking about it. Not what's happening in the last 48 hours. They're not talking about it. They talked about what they wanted to do with water rates a few months ago, but they're not talking about what's happening right now. So they are beginning your extermination now. Very quietly, very subtle. After all, who can be mad at them? You didn't pay your water bill. What are they supposed to do? Let you stay? They have engineered it and geared it in a way that nobody's really going to be able to defend. But understand something. Detroit doesn't want to be a hotbed of Pan-Africanism. Detroit does not want to build up black business. Okay, you don't want to build it up, then we will just exterminate you. Now you don't have to build anything you don't want to. You just sit there, and we'll just wipe you out. We will starve you out, because you can do a lot of things, but you can't live without water. And you'll just pick up and go somewhere else. Where else? We don't give a damn. You won't be here anymore. Mona, Detroit is a city of roughly 700,000 people. And almost half of those, 300,000 accounts, are in arrears. They're past due on their water bills. Almost half. 300,000 plus accounts are behind on their water bills. At this point, maybe you as a business owner know something about these things. How in the world does a whole city, half of a black city, end up in arrears on their water bills? How do they end up in a situation like this?
It's planned. $175 million of outstanding bills. How many years does that take to happen? Well, and then they keep on raising the rate, and they said they're going to raise the rate by 8.7%. So they're trying to rid the lower income people so they can move in the private people and make the city more attractive for private ownership. And how do you as African-Americans go months and months without water before you say, I got to get out of here?
Well, maybe not so much about even getting out of here. How long do you sit there before you say, I need a plan? You see, the problem with most single mothers is that they don't have a plan for getting out of poverty. There is no plan to get out of the situation that they're in. The plan is just, let's see if I can find another social agency that will pay my bills. There is no strategy for getting free. And what they're doing right now is that they're saying, you can keep welfare. You can keep your food stamps, wench. Oh, I'm sorry. In Michigan, the governor is taking all that, isn't he? They're putting a cap on welfare and they're getting rid of the food stamps. They're hitting poor people from every side. I'm sorry. They're hitting super brute sluts and dusty niggas from every side now. They're hitting everybody from every side. They're taking your shelter, Section 8. They're taking your food stamps, and now they're taking your water. Mona, they're going straight after the necessities. They ain't playing around. They're not joking around. They're going dead after your necessities. Now, how do you end up with that many accounts past due? As Mona said, they let you go. What they did, this is a trick that is commonly played with tax taxes for property taxes. You see, the city or the state does not come after your property immediately. They don't do that. What they do is they let you go for 2 or 3 years without paying your taxes. And next thing you know, they put your property up for auction. And you're talking about, well, don't I just owe $500 in taxes? They're like, no, you owe $500 per year in taxes plus penalties. You owe all that. So you don't owe us $500. You owe us $5,000. So by the time they put your property on the auction block, you ain't got a prayer of getting it back. You ain't got a chance because you ain't got a clue. They let you go and go and go and keep going. That was what they did. And by the time they drop the hammer on you, you can't carry the load. And that's what they're doing now with the water bills. By the way, in Michigan, and for those of you who live in Michigan, I'll ambush Negus Boo, some of my Michigan people. Can't they take your property in Michigan if you owe money for water bills? By the way, I think I remember Democracy Now, as a matter of fact, a story that I did years ago here on the Black Channel, a story that I talked about years ago where the city was taking people's property because they had not paid their water bills. I want you all to go look into that, by the way. Does that go against your property rights that they can put you into adjudication over your water bill? I want you all to go take a look into that. Go take a look into that. If I'm remembering the events correctly, Mona, they got you so behind the eight ball up there, it's not even funny now. And we had a whole bunch of Negroes who thought that this was going to be a game and thought that this was going to be a joke and thought that this was going to be playtime for Barney. So if I got folk in Michigan out there, I want you to call me up. Call me up and tell me if I'm wrong about that. That in Detroit, they've been taking people's property who owed money on their water bills. That you owed money on your water bill and that they took your property, that your property went into forfeiture because you owed money on your water bill. I want to say it was a story about this little old lady that they went after.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little old lady, a little old black lady that they went after. If I'm wrong about that, somebody call me up and say that. Somebody call me up and call me on that. But for those of you who live in Detroit, if I'm right about that, you understand that things just got real. Because right now they say they're going after 3,000, but if you take a look at the story, if you all take a look at the other part of the story from the other article that I posted up from the Independent in the UK, the Independent reports that according to these activists, that number could go as high as 30,000 by the end of the summer. Go ahead, Mona.
I'm sorry, because they said that they're up to 3,000 homes a week, and then they're raising the rate, and the average water bill is $75. Because, see, in California, if you're 2 pennies short on your utility, they shut you off. They don't let you get hundreds of dollars in the hole like that. So would you describe that as engineered genocide?
They have got the game so stacked, so engineered, so well thought out, so incredibly in place that it's not even funny now. Negroes have been playing a game with people who are not playing any games with them. That's the problem. You're playing games with people who are not playing with you. These folks got it engineered every single way you can possibly think of. They got engineered. They got the game set up so smooth. They got the game set up so smooth. And they've been putting these pieces into place for decades, Mona. See, black folk are just now figuring out that these people already had a plan to get rid of you. You've been raised by a bunch of loser females who turned you into loser males, and now you just have a group of black losers in Detroit who can't do anything. Get out. And you see how California whittled the black population down from 15% to 7%. Guess what? They're about to take Detroit's population from 80% to 20. Mark my words. Professor Black Truth warned you. I warned you. Detroit, Judgment Day is here now. Judgment Day is here for you now. There is nothing you can do, Detroit. There's nothing you can do. Oh, yeah, one more thing that Mona Lachey, of course, in her infinite insight did point out. Well, they're going to clear y'all out so that they can bring in non-black people. What did Rick Snyder say that he wanted to do just a few weeks ago? He has a plan for Michigan to be able to fast-track in foreign immigrants into Michigan.
Right.
So if you're wondering what they're going to do to replace your black population, for every one of those Arabs or Latinos that you see getting off the plane, that is your you and your child's replacement. Every time you see them getting off that plane, just understand that's your replacement. He is here to remove you because you can't stay. But you see, you thought it was a joke. You thought this was a game. You thought that as a black female, you could fly your way through life with your panties. And as a black male, that you could be swagalicious and that was all you needed to be. Now you're up against people who don't give a damn about swag. You are up against people who don't give a flying fig about how sexy your big fat weave-wearing ass is. They got the game sewn up and locked down. That's what you're up against right now. So you want to be mad at me because I called you a bastard baby-making super slut and that you're not passing anything down to your children? Well, why don't you get that little attitude with the city of Detroit when that truck comes to turn your water off? Now, let me tell you all the next part of the game. The next part of the game is going to be that they're going to demand privatization of the water in order to afford to turn off all those people. The fact that they let this many accounts go past due is their justification and their rationale for demanding privatization. What you going to do, Black in Detroit? What are you doing? What you doing? What's your plan? No, you don't have to be happy with me. You don't have to like it. I bet you when them Arabs start moving in your neighborhood, oh, wait a minute, they're already doing that. Oh, well, game over. Mona, I'm calling it for Detroit now. I'm calling it. For everybody out there who wants to know what do I think about Detroit, this is what I think. I'm calling it. Calling the election. White supremacy has won the election in Detroit. Black people have lost by a landslide, even though they're 80% of the population. Game over, Detroit. It's over for you. Just like California, game over, California. It's over. White supremacy has won. Game over, Detroit. White supremacy has won. There will be a few black people left, but that's going to be it. as a powerhouse, as a force, black people in Detroit, you are done. You squandered your opportunities. The civil rights generation of cowards and coons, of sluts and homo thugs, they sold you children out. And here's the point for you young black people to the age of 40. You better figure out how to tell your parents, damn you! You young black folk better stop this butt. You better stop kissing up and sucking up to your elders who didn't do nothing for you. And you better start learning how to show some disrespect to people who didn't build nothing and didn't do nothing for you. You better start learning how to do that. Because when your mouth is dry and you're wishing you had some water to bathe in, just remember, those are the folks who put you in that position because they didn't build nothing, they didn't leave nothing for you. The telephone lines are now open. The number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your access code to the blackchannel.net radio, the only home of intelligent black thought. So open up the phone lines here. Caller from 916, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, this is William, calling from Sacramento, California.
What's on your mind, brother?
I'm calling because a friend of mine had told me a story today about a local rapper named Trick Trick from Detroit. I guess he have a no-fly zone policy or whatever, where any rapper outside of Detroit, if they come and try to perform a show at any venue, if they don't make a phone call to him, he's going to prevent them from performing. And I guess Rick Ross was scheduled to perform at a venue in Detroit, and he was able to get him and over 100 of his goons to surround the entire venue to prevent him from performing. And the only thing I can think of was, wow, he can mobilize and get 100 people, over 100 people, to do something as stupid and just waste their time to go and prevent a rapper from performing at a venue where they could have gathered 100 people to try to gain power, wealth, and influence, you know? I mean, if you can get 100 people to do something, why not try to build a business? Why not try to rebuild the city of Detroit? I mean, you'd rather spend useless time on dumb rap feuds, and I don't understand how he thinks preventing rappers from out of town, the city of Detroit, in any way. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that, and I just feel like that's the problem with us as young black men, is instead of building, we spend our time doing senseless stuff that's just a waste of time, you know?
Well, it's not just a problem of young black men. The reason why it's a problem of young black men is because the old black men are the ones who taught you all how to do that. You see, being Superfly and Shaft never built nothing. It never did nothing. Nicky Barnes made money for some people, but for the community as a whole, he didn't build any businesses or build an empire. He didn't do what the Kennedys and the Bronfmans did. He didn't do that. Now, this guy, Mr. Trick Trick, first of all, I heard about this story. I don't have the particulars of it, but I heard something about it. I don't really know the details, but I heard something about that. Now, here's the thing. First question is, where was your Detroit Police Department for gathering happened? Where were they?
That's a good question.
Now, you just had your new white mayor. Your new white mayor just got into office last November or last summer, whenever he got elected in there. What happened to him? Where is he to take control of his city? You mean to tell me that nobody notified them that this was going on? Where was he? I'm telling you that they did know. Telling you that they allowed this because they are constantly taking the temperature of black people to find out what our priorities really are. Are we actually mobilizing to challenge white supremacy, or are we still playing the same old dumb plantation nigga go after each other games? That's what they were checking for. And that little incident is a confirmation to a white supremacist that these people ain't even looking at us. You were saying, they're not even looking at white supremacy. They're not even thinking about challenging it, even if you believe that this guy's a pawn of white supremacy. Black people as a whole are not even thinking about that. They're not thinking about it.
All they did was take away from another man making a living. They mobilized 100 black men against a black man. And here's the question that I wanted to ask you earlier, Justin. When the article came out in May that J.P. Morgan Chase said that they would invest $100 million to revitalize Detroit, did black people actually thought that they were going to revitalize it for them to stay there?
Black people in Detroit are completely and totally clueless about anything that would actually help them. So they did not initiate this action by J.P. Morgan. They did not advocate it. They did not negotiate it. They have no seat at the table. J.P. Morgan is going to do what's necessary to benefit J.P. Morgan. And what they see is prime real estate in Detroit that has opened up. And they're going for it. They're going to buy it for pennies on the dollar. They're going to own things for pennies on the dollar. They're going to bring in a bunch of non-black people, and it's going to take off. And black people in Detroit, for white folk, will just be an unpleasant memory. Thank you for Motown. That was your contribution. Thank you for all the great Motown music. You can leave now, nigger. That's the way it's about to go down.
I have one more. I have one question.
Before you finish there, one more thing I just want to throw in because I want to make sure I get this in real quick.
Okay.
What did Mr. Trick get out of that little exercise in loitering? What did he get out of it? Did he make any money? Does he have any power, wealth, and influence? Does he call that power and influence? A damn sure ain't wealth. Is that his idea of power? Mr. Trick, what did you actually get out of it?
The best that he
can hope for right now is that if another rapper actually did want to come to Detroit, they're going to say no. So as a power move, that was the living illustration of stupid. If that's really how it happened.
Rick Ross said he might not. They say Rick Ross might never perform in Detroit again. So I don't see how he helped the city by pulling that stupid stuff.
Well, if the allegations are accurate, and I don't know that they are, but if it's true, just understand that's a damn joke, brother.
He wanted street credibility. He wanted that hood power. He was the man that, stopped Rick Ross. That means something to losers in the hood because he doesn't have anything else. So he thought because he flexed his muscles, I'm the man. See what I did? I stopped Rick Ross, a man that has millions or has made millions. I did that.
Yeah, and it's like how Jason always said. I mean, he's right that blacks, all they want is attention. I mean, he didn't get any power, wealth, or influence from that. All he got was attention, and he's happy with that. That's all he wanted, is other rappers to call him, give him a call whenever they want to perform, and he's just happy with that. It's just this false, they want their ego stroked. That's all, and they're happy. They're not getting any money. He's not demanding any kind of business deals. He just wants other rappers' time to give him a call before they visit Detroit. And that just stroke his little ego. He'll be happy.
And who is he? What is he? And furthermore, if this guy better be an agent of white supremacy. He better be. He better be. Because that's the only thing that's going to keep him safe. Don't you know that he just, if this guy is legitimate and actually really did this, then doesn't he understand that he just put a damn billboard over himself? To law enforcement, to the state police, to the FBI, if anything ever happens to any rapper in that city anywhere for any reason, he has just made it public knowledge that he is suspect number one. even if he didn't have nothing to do with it, he has now engraved it in people's minds that if there is any violence in this city in a rap concert, at a rap show, or against a rapper, he is a prime suspect. That was all he really just did. He better hope he is an agent of white supremacy, because if he's not, his days are so numbered.
Well, it actually says in this article that he may not be a household name outside of his hometown, but he is infamous for busting heads. So, yeah, that's what he does. Little hometown rapper. Never got any recognition, so, you know, he goes around pulling stunts like this. And come out with a come here with my permission, and you know you won't get hurt.
You see, this is why black men were never able to take over the dope game. This is why white men did it, and now the Latinos. But black men could never take over the dope game because of things like this. You see, when the Latinos and the Mexicans and the Colombians tool up, when they tool up, it's for power, wealth, and influence. When they talk about going out in squads and talk about what you better not do, it's because they are dealing with protecting their power, their wealth, and their influence. Al Capone and all the rest of his ilk out of Chicago, it was all about protecting their power, wealth, and influence. They did not tool up for any other reason. Black men tool up like this is some damn HBO drama. We are the only males on earth who are willing to go to jail for the rest of our lives if somebody will post our picture on Twitter. If we can be in the top 10 trending things on Twitter, we will gladly go to jail for the rest of our lives. Gladly. That's what we do. So when you hear that some goon in Detroit has taken it upon himself that No rapper shall come to my city without my permission. Hey, dumbass, why don't you say that no business shall open in Detroit without my permission? Why don't you try that one? Happy coon. White man's trick. Why don't you try that one? Why don't you try saying that no sports team shall open up in my city unless they make a phone call and ask my permission first. Why don't you try that one? Why don't you try that one? Hey, you 100 bums outside the stadium, outside the arena, outside of the auditorium, wherever it was. Why don't you guys get together and say that no restaurant shall open up in Detroit without our permission? How about you try that one on? As a matter of fact, here's one even better, Super Coons. Why don't you open up your own restaurant or your own radio station and then say, nobody shall open a restaurant or radio station except us. You know, force black people into group economics. Why don't you try that one, Trick Coon and his faithful squad of lackeys? Why don't you super jigaboons try that one on? Why don't you go and actually challenge the power of the white establishment? Why don't you actually, since you want to start playing about group economics, if you're going to go insist that nobody can see a rapper without your permission, why don't you go build something for the people to see and then insist that the people spend their money with you? Why don't you try that, super coon? But you see, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen because coon trick coon, whatever you want to call him. These are just jigaboons are allowed by the white establishment to do things that inhibit black people. They know full damn well what their limits are. White supremacy today is so sophisticated, it no longer even needs to tell you what the limits are. You already know what the limit is. You already know what you can't do. And they're just cueing their programming right now. That is all that they're doing. I don't see Mr. Trick Trick Coon Coon Trick Trick telling the water department that nobody shall turn off water in the city of Detroit without my permission. Not unless you make a phone call to me. Nobody can turn off the water in Detroit unless you make a phone call to me. You see, you don't get respect for flexing somebody who's not a threat to you. You have to be like Floyd Mayweather Jr. for me. You got to take on the biggest and the baddest and the best. You've got to take on the number one challengers. Sorry, folks, after Pacquiao got knocked out, he's no longer number one. It is what it is what it is. Should have just took the match when the man offered it to you the first time. Well, now, Incandescent just asked a very good question right now. He said that Eminem, now Eminem, as we know, who's from Detroit, I wonder if Mr. Trick Trick is going to pull that off with Eminem if he holds a concert there. I wonder how that's going to go down. I wonder where Trick Power is going to be. He needs to show us some of that Trick Power since he doesn't have any black power. Let's see some of that Trick Power when Eminem comes to town. Let's see some of that Trick Power there. The 100 goons that you got together. Let's see those guys flex there. I'd be interested to see that. I'd like to see that. Why don't you show us how good you really are, Mr. Trick Trick Coon Trick? But that doesn't happen with black males. And understand something. Just be very, very clear about something. Let's just be very clear about something. Males in Detroit are a damn joke. If you've fallen so low that the most and the best you can do is interfere with some B-level rapper's concert, if that is the best you can do, and yet the police and the water department, you ain't got the water department scared. You don't get props for that. You don't get props for that. They are shutting off the water in the city. And what I'm telling you all is that what they're going to do, what they are doing right now, is they are maneuvering black people in Detroit. They are maneuvering them all into one small enclave community. And at that point, they will have you so small, so insignificant, and so isolated that it won't matter anymore. It won't matter anymore. It won't matter one damn bit. These folk are sitting up here shutting off the water. And we got Negroes talking about their sole concern is a rap concert. They want primacy and power over a rap concert. That's what black men in Detroit are doing today. They line up around the block and down the street for LeBrons and for the new Jordans. And they're going back to housing that they don't even have water at.
Trick Trick has done some recordings with Eminem, and Eminem has been a producer on some of his stuff. And according to this article, June 10th, they're coming out with a new song here periodically. So they wrote together. So he probably won't shut Eminem down. But he'll shut his brother down. So you're absolutely correct when you said he was a vehicle for white supremacy.
But they're going to go to Brazil and go pick up chicks in Brazil. You know, females in Brazil are probably going to expect you to bathe, fellas. And you kind of need water for that. Not being mean, I'm just saying, you're probably going to need water to pull that out. You know, you probably are going to need water for that. But brother, certainly you understand that you're dealing with a similar situation where you are in California.
Out here, let's see.
Okay, if you're trying to say something, but your phone's volume is real low.
It's a lot. I hear from you a lot.
Okay, brother, your phone's volume has dropped off real bad. Let me see if we just give you a chance to give us a call back up again. Mona, this is what black males are concentrating on today. They're concentrating on power they don't have. They're concentrating on females they can't get. They're concentrating on everything except reality and the real world, and it's just pathetic. The telephone number is 646-787-933. The tonight's broadcast is intended for the purposes of sobering your ass up. I'm here tonight. I don't entertain at the Black Channel. I never have. I never will. I never do. You see, I could tell you all kinds of funny little things, and I could make this thing real damn entertaining if I just wanted to. Black society is like a football team, and I'm the honest coach. I'm Jimmy Johnson. I'm the guy who comes in and tells you that this team sucks. I'm the guy who tells you that. And since I'm the guy who's honest about it, I've never been quite as popular as people would have liked. But understand, Mona, we need uncut truth at this point. Uncut, uninterrupted, unadulterated, uncontaminated truth. That right now, as a people, Detroit is a disgrace. And it's a disgrace because we should have been able to turn that into a black socioeconomic mecca. It should be nothing but a powerhouse hitting on all cylinders. How the hell is Berry Gordy going to build Motown? The Negroes are telling me that they can't build a damn hamburger shack in Detroit. And it's the same stupid everywhere. Endless amounts of money for shoes and hair weaves. No money for a business. How the hell did you come up with unlimited funds for hair weave and for tennis shoes? And not a dime for economic empowerment. How the hell does that happen, Mona?
Because of their priorities. From what I understand, Detroit is the hair mecca. The nails are controlled by African-American women. You know, they're running around in Maori shoes, and, you know, they have swag, but they don't have anything else. Their priorities. That's what they have prioritized.
That word that you use, swag, how the hell can that be? Because you got expensive-ass shoes, but you do not have the basic necessities. You got a Gucci bag, but you don't have the basicness. You don't have food and water?
But a whole lot of followers, a whole lot of monkey see, monkey do. A whole lot of competition for materialism, but not trying to own nothing, control nothing, or pass nothing on. They're living for today. You only live once. Nobody is challenging them. If nobody is asking for them to do better, they just do what everybody else does. And that's why they're in the position they're in now. And as far as the hair game is concerned, they're a good 5 or 6 years in front of us in California as far as hairstyles are concerned. You know, they do that stuff. We bring it here, and they've already had that. So they should be far advanced in everything. And as far as their bill only being $75 for water in California, that's cheap. So, yeah, what are you doing with your money? It's on your wheels. It's, you know, it's not in the bank.
I bet you all those Negroes out there interfering with Rick Ross's concert, I bet you they all had the flyest, newest Jordans on out there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
No power, no wealth, no influence. If they got arrested, they would probably be looking at 10 years because pretty much all of them probably were felons. And they were willing to give up their freedom for some jigaboon who has some beef against a rapper, and you don't really know either one of these guys. A person is lucky if they've got 3 friends in this life. You do not have 100 friends. You just got a bunch of dumb Negroes who are willing to go to jail for you for something stupid, like Ray Caruth. There's always some black male putting other people up to stuff that they themselves would not do. They threaten people and all kinds of stuff. I bet you Mr. Trick Trick wasn't out that night. That day, that night, that evening, whatever. I bet you if that actually did occur, I bet you he wasn't out there. You've always got people who are willing to tell other folk to do something stupid on their behalf. There's always black males. You always got these dudes out here who want to manipulate other people. They tell them to go do something stupid that will get them in trouble and them in jail and their life messed up. Trick and people like the Fraud, they're always off telling other folk, okay, I don't like this person. You go do something, and if you get in trouble, don't worry. I'll do something to help you. And you've got a bunch of ADD crack baby males out there who let dudes like that talk them off into some garbage. But I bet you he wasn't out there that night. And I bet you all their shoes and their Jordans were immaculate. Black men, it's time for you to wake up. It's past time. In Detroit, don't bother waking up. It's already over for you. But it is what it is, what it is at this point. Caller from 510, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, what's up, TBA? This is Che from Oakland, you know. I just wanted to comment on what you guys were talking about. It's a dire situation over here, man. You know, it just occurred to me today, actually, after watching one of your recent shows with Donald Trump, you know, and his comments that, you know, our back is against the wall. Cats really don't know what time it is. You know, when I step out of the house, I feel like I'm representing black people wherever I go, you know. So I try to roll out with a book. You know, I'm 23, a young guy. So I see the fear, you know, in mostly every other race, especially white people's eyes, when they see a black man with a book, that's when they're really scared, you know. But when they see you with a gun, things, you know, I think Eddie Griffin or some comedian talked about this best, but, you know they got you. They know they got you when they see you with a gun. But when they see you with a book, they get scared, you know. So I'm just, you know, chiming in. I just wanted to basically, talk about that. And being a young guy, I mean, it's like I'm in the belly of the beast, you know. It's like ignorance is just all around me. I mean, I'm sure I'm just echoing a lot of the same thoughts everyone calls in about. But, you know,
well, at least you actually have thoughts. That's important. First of all, remember, broadcast, not show. Steve Harvey does the show. Second of all, where you are in Oakland, you're next.
Yeah.
By the way, you're next. Black men in Oakland were finished really decades ago, but you got your final eviction notice with Oscar Grant that you have no power. You don't even have the ability to defend your own lives now. That it is officially open season. That it will be black mayors. It was a black mayor who oversaw the murder of Oscar Grant and did nothing. did absolutely nothing. But then again, that shouldn't be surprising because, you see, there were black men in influential places with Trayvon Martin and didn't do nothing either until outside people started saying something. You start seeing the same pattern over and over again. Mona, who was the mayor of Los Angeles when Rodney King got beaten?
I can see his face right now.
Was Bradley the mayor of Los Angeles?
Yes, I'm Bradley. Tom Bradley.
Now, the reason why you can't really go wrong about Bradley being in charge is because the man was there for 20 damn years. He was the mayor of Los Angeles for 20 years, people. And Rodney King happened near the end of his mayorship of Los Angeles, not the beginning. And he's going to have us. Well, he's no longer here, but you would expect us to believe that there was nothing. In 20 years, he couldn't do anything to reform the Los Angeles Police Department, the most brutal, dictatorial, terroristic regime this side of Al-Qaeda. But there was nothing Tom Bradley could do. The Los Angeles Police Department is one of the worst terrorist organizations this side of Hamas. Bradley would have had us believe that there was nothing he could do for 20 years. But then again, when you consider that Tom Bradley was himself a former police officer, well, he was fully vetted before white supremacy gave him the wheel. Now, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he...
Oh, by the way, we're going to this in 7 a.m., by the way. For those of you who wonder, by the way, I just gave you a little glimpse into 7 a.m. because most of you did not know that about Tom Bradley. And you see, I need a documentary so I can go long form into it. But by the way, we do go into that in 7 a.m. because there's a lot more of that kind of thing out there. And Ron Dellums of Oakland, as far as I'm concerned, he's Tom Bradley light. No pun intended there. Go ahead, Mona.
I'm not sure if I'm correct, but I think he was police commissioner, too. I'm not sure. But, yeah, he was by that time, he was tired. He was trying to get out. And he couldn't do anything. He was just a pawn. He was just that face.
I'm sorry. No. He could do something. He could have done plenty. He could have done plenty. Rodney King was not an anomaly. You don't have 12 cops standing around while a man is being beaten laying on the ground, and this is not standard procedure. Because understand something, they didn't say anything. They just took him in, said he was resisting arrest. That was it. That was all you heard. Nobody broke the blue wall of silence. Nobody. Nobody in the Rampart scandal broke the blue wall of silence. Nobody. Tom Bradley was aware of these things. They always are. Hell, if you and I walking the streets are aware, he knew. Did he fire anybody? Did he even demand? He could have been on TV every day saying, hello, I'm your mayor, Tom Bradley, again, just letting you know that I want to fire the police commissioner, even though the mayor does not, the police commissioner is not assigned. They actually have a set term, so the mayor can actually get rid of the police commissioner. It actually takes a higher level. There's actually a committee in Los Angeles that does has to get rid of a police commissioner if that kind of thing ever came about. But he could have been out there saying that I want somebody new for the next term for police commissioner. He never did anything. You know what Tom Bradley gave us? Bill Bratton. That was what Tom Bradley gave us. You all know Bill Bratton. He was the architect of Stop and Frisk in New York before he came to Los Angeles. And guess where Bill Bradley is today, by the way, folks? Guess where Bill Bratton is today? Guess where Police Commissioner Bratton, who pioneered stop and frisk to target black males in New York, then he went to Los Angeles. Guess where Commissioner Bratton is today, everybody? He is back in New York. He's the commissioner of the police department under Mayor de Blasio in New York. De Blasio became mayor, and his first and his only real candidate, actually, was Bratton. No, don't believe me. Go look it up for yourselves. Go look it up for yourselves. Because you're making progress, all you Negro bedwinches looking at his wife. You're making progress in New York. Things is getting better. He just paid $30 million to settle that case with the Central Park Five, and now it's going to be open season on black males, and you can't blame Mayor de Blasio now, can you? He can't possibly be engineering white supremacy. After all, look what he did for the Central Park Five. Look what he did for them. Certainly, he's got to be cool. He's got to be okay. It must be all right. How could he be engineering white supremacy? They just agreed to drop $4 billion. This guy is obviously anti-white supremacy, isn't he? And they have got a revolving door of overseers. Bill Bratton has been in a revolving door. He was overseeing your persecution in New York. They moved him over to Los Angeles. Now he's back in New York again. Why? Because you know the results you're going to get from that man. You don't put somebody like Bill Bratton in the position that he's in if you don't know what you're going to get from him. You know who he's going to target. You know who he's going to go after. He's got a 2-decade-plus record. Know who's going to be public enemy number one under him. You know who he's going to be focused on. That reason that you say he's at the top of my list. Because you know who he's going after. So, brother, understand something. Oakland is in the same position. They can start cutting off y'all's water tomorrow. By the way, that water situation is the same for black folk around the country, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
When the water department, when that truck rolls from Compton to Oakland to the Bay, from San Francisco to San Diego, when that truck rolls, it's mostly black folk and some Latinos that they're going to go turn off. And what they found out in Detroit is that what we want to do is we want to adjust the knobs. We want to adjust the dials. But what do you mean adjust the dials, TBA? You see, what we want is a situation where the truck rolls, but now the truck only rolls once to turn you off. We're not going to be worried about them turning you back on again. Now, Mona was talking about how they doubled the water rates. Over the last 10 years, the water rate has doubled, and now they want to raise the water rates, this double water rate. Now, they're not talking about raising the water rates 8% of what they were 10 years ago. They're talking about raising it 8% of what it is now. So you got a water rate that is already double what it used to be, and now they actually want to raise it with another 8% of what now is. So what they're saying is we're going to keep ticking up the rate of the water on people who are already behind. And anybody know if they raise the reconnection fee? Because in most of these, you have to pay a fee. If it gets disconnected, you have to pay the fee for disconnect and for reconnect.
Right.
Does anybody know if they raise those fees? Anybody in Detroit, tell me, did they raise that fee also? So what I'm saying is that they're doing the trick that the credit cards used to do. And we all know how most black folk end up with their credit cards, don't we? They eventually end up not paying it or whatever the case might be. But can you do your water the same way that you did your credit card? Can you just say, forget about it, and walk away from water the same way that you did your credit cards? Can you do that?
That's a good question, TBA. But, you know, I mean, it really is an insidious plot, what they got set up. But it's like a multi-pronged attack because it's really every faucet, you know, every outlet that we need, they're just tying up. Like, you know, over here, the gentrification is pretty big. You know, I've been out here for two decades. You know, the area I'm in, it's like called Lake Merritt, used to be all black people out here. Slowly seeing that change. Some of these schools that have been here before I even was here, you know, elementary schools, they're closing them down, turning them for offices, you know, just because it's a nice area. You know, they don't even give a damn. But this type of stuff, you know, it has major effects on the community.
But black folk have been asleep at the switch for so long, we have become so complacent that we will not get up to save our water, but we will get up to go act the fool at a rap concert. In Oakland, it's the same story with new tennis shoes when they come out. Same story. Absolutely the same. Absolutely the same. It has become social Darwinism. With black folk for the last 15 years, I've heard black folk Mona talking about, oh, we could never be wiped out. That will never happen. White folks' numbers are going down and our numbers are going up. Don't you know that white supremacy has such a lock on the game that all they have to, they don't even have to turn the dial hard. They don't even have to turn the dial hard. All they have to do is just adjusting a little bit. That's all they're doing in Detroit. They just adjusted it a little bit, and now black folk can't hang on. They didn't even have to raise it 400%. They just doubled it. And 10 years later, if the average water bill was $50 back then, and let's just, I mean, if it's $50, if the average water bill was $50 and now it's $100, think about that. All it took was doubling it to wipe you out. Don't you know that every other city around this country is looking at Detroit and what Michigan has done as the template for how you can, quote, deal with your black problem? I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Man, I agree with what you just said, you know, but what's really striking to me is just how they just don't have any shame in their game anymore. You know, they used to try to be subtle about it, but, you know, as Donald Trump was saying, it's just so in your face right now. We got to just be as in your face as they are, you know, to level the playing field. So, you know, on that note, Black First, and, you know, I'll see you guys on the flip side. Peace.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight, brother. I mean, they don't understand, Mona, that there is no safe place right now. Everything is targeted. We've been hanging on and bull jiving for so long that we are vulnerable everywhere. We're not just vulnerable in one or two places. We are vulnerable everywhere. There is no safe place for black folk because we did not spend the last 50 years building an infrastructure, building power, wealth, and influence. We did not do that. All we did was play around, become the best dancers, get the best hairstyles, and now we don't even have that anymore, by the way. That was all we did, and it's game over at this point. They brought out the damn shivs for us. Caller from 951, you're on live with the Black Channel.
What's up, brother? This is Waza from Moreno Valley. Wow. What do you start? I mean, I'm 59 years old, grew up in Compton, and I've seen this forever. But I can complain about it, but, you know, there were those of us who didn't play the game. We just didn't. We said that if we was going to go down, we was going to go down fighting with our brains, not with our weapons or, you know, being part of a gang or this other foolishness that was going on. We just decided we're not going to do that. We had a choice. We weren't the most popular guys in school. We wasn't the fly guy. We didn't wear the expensive clothes. But we got educated. We had jobs. We held each other accountable. So there's a group of people that I deal with from Compton, from Long Beach, from Watts that didn't fall into this game, but there were so many of us who did. It just was, you weren't educated, or or you was educated poorly. It was all about, we called them tennis shoe pimps. They never had a car, didn't have a job, but they could convince some woman or some girl to take care of them. And we watched them. I talk to my friends right now, and we talk about, remember those guys that were partying when we was working? These are the same guys that's out there now. And it just continued on and on and on. It's serious. So I don't know what to say about it. We could talk about it till our face turns blue, but it's not going to change those who don't want to wake up.
We're not going to talk about it till our faces turn blue. Understand something, brother. Let me find here, first of all, how old are you?
59.
Okay, so you and Mona are peers. She's in Compton, too, by the way.
Yeah.
So she knows everything you're talking about because she's watched it unfold, and she was with one of them.
Exactly.
Fellas.
Exactly. Yeah.
She was with one of them dudes.
And exactly.
The real point here, brothers, I mean, you said it very well. I mean, because, look, I mean, we all know the Panthers started in Oakland, okay? It wasn't like it was always like that, but understand something. I've had the Panthers. I've talked to the Panthers. I know Panthers, and they will all tell you the same damn thing, which was that it's amazing to them to see all these older black folk today who claim to be Black Panthers because they're like, when we was beating the streets, wasn't nobody out there.
Exactly.
So it's not like there was some great big huge Pan-African black empowerment movement. The Panthers kicked up a lot of dust, but black people as a group were not on the same page and supportive of the Panthers. They were telling folk who were with the Panthers, you niggas going to get killed. Y'all need to stop that. Just stop making trouble. So what if he got shot by the police? He's probably in the wrong place. And the same stuff that we hear today, the same coonery and buffoonery that we hear today, that was what they were saying back then. That was what they were saying back then. So 5% of black people being on the ball is not going to save us.
No, not at all.
That's not going to save us. Well, TBA, why are you doing this broadcast tonight and about these things? Because I am talking to the people who are already awake and already alert. I got folks in Detroit. I got people in Michigan. And I had a fellow who called in last night, a young dude, and he asked me, what do I do in California to get other black men together with me? I said, nothing, leave. Because you need somebody who's going to tell you the damn truth. Because I got a fellow on my phone right now from Compton and a woman on my phone from Compton, and they're telling me what happened over the last 30 years.
Well, I can tell you what happened.
If they didn't start building it 30 years ago, that 20-year-old young man ain't got nothing waiting for him.
No, not at all.
If only
he's lost. He's been lost.
If only 10% of y'all has some sense 30 years ago, then that means only 5% of these kids are going to be okay today. I'm not going to tell these folks to stay someplace where I know they're outnumbered, outmaneuvered, outgunned. I want them to hear me talking like this because this is what they feel and this is what they know. And they can say, you know what, that guy, this guy's got it. That's what I'm feeling right there. I thought I was the only one, but I get it. And as for everybody else, and I give hell to the civil rights generation. I do. I understand that there were a few who did do what they were supposed to do, but as a group, there weren't enough. There were not enough.
No.
Got one fella like you in the library. Got one you, and every damn body else is out here playing the damn game, putting on the shoes, trying to be Superfly or Nicky Barnes or Frank Lucas or whoever, whatever they were idolizing at the time. They're trying to do all this dumb stuff. And one you. And that's it.
That's
I can't save a school if all my students are stupid, but I got one honor roll student. I can't save
can't
a school
it.
Like that.
Cannot do it. Cannot do it. I was 10 years old in Watts when I saw the Watts riot. And it was crazy. I mean, I'm a 10-year-old kid. My responsibility at home was to make sure the house roof was wet so it wouldn't burn up. That was my responsibility as a 10-year-old kid in Watts. Before we moved to Compton in 67, which at that time the community we moved into was all white, which was cool. Well, I was like five, maybe six black kids in our elementary school. And within that first 12 months, all the whites were gone. The blacks moved in. And within the next 2 years after that, you know, your gang showed up and the rest is, you know, frontline news or whatever, you know, but education, you know, I just believe that if you miseducate, it's not like they don't know what they're doing. They're not trying to tell you who you are. They're not trying to educate you any kind of way. They just throw some stuff at you and send you on the way, and you pass the test or you don't. It doesn't matter. At some point, you pop out the other end, and there you are. When I came out of Compton Unified School District, there was two things that I did know. One, that I was in trouble, and two, they didn't teach me a damn thing. So
wow.
It's my responsibility to educate myself. And
that's
I'm not playing the game if they're playing.
By the way, that's a hell of a report card to give them. There was one thing I knew when I left school. I was in trouble. Whoa.
In trouble. Yes. Didn't have a clue. And knew that I was going to be out here in the real world dealing with grown folks who's been playing this game way longer than I have. And at some point, very early on, I realized that, no, I'm not playing this game. I never was one of those who followed the crowd. We're going to do it our way, or we're going to go down doing it our way. It's okay if I fail, but I'm going to fail doing what I think is best, not following some other fool down the street. And a lot of my friends, they went that way. But most of us, we sort of stayed clear of that trouble because it just was too much work. I the idea of someone taking away your freedom and telling you when you can or cannot go outside, would just, I'm not dealing with that at all. So I have to find another way. This whole justice system is not designed to benefit us. It's designed to destroy us. So you can complain about it, but the best thing to do is not be involved with it. Do it, there's a legal, you actually spend more time doing stuff illegal and more work to do it illegal than to do it legal.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem, though. I mean, what you're saying is correct, although, as Tariq said, I think he said it very, very well when he said that you can say that you will never commit a crime, but you cannot say that you will never be accused of committing one.
This is true. This
and
is
right
true.
Now, the situation that we're in is you see them releasing black males who are innocent every day at the Central Park Five.
Exactly.
I mean, we're in a situation right now where you can be as innocent and law-abiding as you want to be and still be in the court system. I don't call it the justice system because that's not what it does. It gives you a court, but it don't give you justice. But you can be as law-abiding as you want to be, and that is not going to prevent you from ending up in the back of a squad car.
That's so true.
I mean, and now with all these tricks that they're using and gang affiliation and, all this other stuff that they're using to grab groups of black males, whether you were committing a crime or not. I mean, the Central Park Five is proof. That was their case test study, that they could grab a group of black males, accuse them
sure.
of a crime, innocent as they could be all damn day long, and still put them in jail, and that's it. As long as nobody ever admits to it, we can keep them there.
Sure.
As long as
sure.
somebody ever confesses, we'll get you there. So once they got that template in place, we lost everything else, and that's because we had no power, wealth, and influence. When you go to a court in Los Angeles, it's 50-50 if you're going to get a white judge or a Latino. Same thing in San Antonio. Same thing in Austin. In Florida, it's more like 70% chance you're going to get a Cuban or Latino judge. Y'all
right.
don't tell me nothing about Florida. I know. Your chances of being in front of a Latino are as good, better than chances of being in front of a white person. So guess what? If I'm Latino walking into a courtroom in Florida, I'm feeling pretty damn good. I'm feeling pretty damn good about my chances.
Exactly.
There is no place in America where your chance, well, outside of a place like Shreveport, but, I mean, we're just a mid-sized city, but outside of places like Shreveport, large areas, because, you can put Shreveport in Oakland,
Oakland's not really
a big city by California standards, but you can put Shreveport in Oakland. And, I mean, but other than that, you don't have any place where black men can walk into a courtroom and it's 50% chance they're going to be in front of a black male judge or a black female judge, for that matter. So, I mean, that is what we should concentrate on. Brother, I don't want a fair court system. I don't. I want a court system that is as rigged and slanted in my favor as I possibly can. I want to know what the outcome is going to be before I go in there, because a court is a place where you have unlimited loss. And I want to make sure if I'm going into a place where I can get unlimited loss, I better not lose.
Exactly.
The corporations don't take that chance. You take a look at the FCC commissioner right now, former lobbyist for the telecommunications companies, and now he's in charge of deciding what the laws are being enforced for the telecommunication companies. That is not a fair courtroom when you go in front of Tom Wheeler. That damn thing is stacked for the corporations as high as it can be, and that's exactly what I want right there as a black male. That's what I want. I want the game
to get on that side. Exactly.
Because white supremacy has got the deck stacked against you. When the police pull you over, the deck is stacked. Well, guess what? I want the damn deck stacked on my side. That's what I want.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's the way it is, though. I mean, I was born not too far from Shreveport, Arcadia. But I came to California at 8 months old. I know nothing about there except when I went back to visit. So I understand Shreveport, southern country, cool place, small town. Shreveport's a larger city, though. But, you know, but when I realized where I was at, I was in Watts. And, you know, it was home. It didn't matter, but... Just watching the stupidity over the years and talking to my brothers growing up, and I talk to a lot of young dudes right now, and a lot of things that they don't know is who they are, what they can be. They're caught up. They don't really want to be in it, but they don't have a choice. And, you know, and it's hard for me. It's easy for me to say you don't have a choice when you have to walk those streets. Either you're part of that mentality or you're not. You're not going to be able to just walk the streets and go to school and be immune to this mindset or this. You got to represent something. So they're caught. They're stuck. Now law enforcement allows this to happen because they don't care if you kill yourself. That's one less person they have to take out the damn game. You know, I lost two nephews in one shooting about 4 years ago. No excuse. No excuse. Walking down the street, killed them both, and it was okay. And I'm thinking, like, how does this happen and no one sees anything? And I was surprised how angry I got so fast. Because at this point, I'm educated. I'm beyond that mindset. But that thing that makes you say someone must pay was so strong in me. I had to basically shut down for like 2 months. I couldn't even talk about it because it was my desire to go kill everybody. It really was. And here's a guy who, at this point, I'm thinking, I got it figured out and stuff. But that anger was just there. I don't think it ever leaves, but you manage it well. And at this point, I mean, how do you kill two people and think it's okay? And you can't tell me who the shooter was. I mean, yeah, you're not going to bring him back, but you can't tell me who the shooter was? And I'm supposed to be okay with that? I mean, I'm ready to go after everybody. Law enforcement, the mayor, the judge. But it's been a waste of my time. At the end of the damn day, I still have a life to live. You know, I didn't live out there. I've been out of that area for probably 30 years now. I live in Moreno Valley, Riverside area. And I still have families down there, but I really don't have a desire to go down there at all. It has nothing for me. The whole mentality is like sort of slow or retarded, like, why are you doing that? Why are you not doing this? There's pockets of, like you said, there's pockets of a few that's trying to pull it together, trying to make it better, but, you know, they're fighting an uphill battle. It's just, but with that being said, we must move forward. We have to. As a people, we have to. Or the game, like you said, is totally done. It's over with. You might as well go somewhere and find yourself an island and stay on it. Don't even come out to, don't even leave. Just stay there.
I talk about these things because I want folk to know that if you don't think that Detroit can happen where you are so blind and naive and sadly mistaken, it's not even funny. Detroit can happen to any of us anywhere in this country, and we better use that we just lost Detroit, Beckley. We better use that as a rallying point to get our collective acts together as a group because we are officially out of time. I'll let you have the last word.
Black first, my brother. Keep doing what you're doing.
Please check in with us again. He's right, though. I mean, we had decades now, Mona, to get our acts together in California. Decades. Decades.
Absolutely not. I just want to say something about Moreno Valley, where he says he's from. And I hope he knows that Moreno Valley is next, because there is a part of Moreno Valley where all the men or all the people of Watts, Imperial Courts, Jordan Downs, and Compton have migrated to. There are, whenever you see apartment complexes that are built for 3, 4, and 5 bedrooms, that's where they sent all the people from Compton and Imperial Courts the projects from, because they had a plan to shut that down. So Moreno Valley, there's a part of Moreno Valley that's just like Compton, and there's no joke out there. They have gangs and everything. I think they have a gang called the Grown and Sexy or something like that. And they also kind of redistrict Moreno Valley. I think they call it Rancho Verdes or something, to try to separate one side of Moreno Valley to the other side. But see, here's the problem with African-American men. They took pride in having a job and being able to contribute 3% to the retirement program so that they wouldn't only get retirement, they would get a pension, and they bought and sold that. And as the man was saying about being educated and having a job, he never understood that that wasn't enough. And as time progressed and technology progressed, African-American man has not progressed. And that's why we find ourselves in this position. My father was born and raised in Watts, California. My auntie also had the house in Watts, California, where the Seminese Liberation Army was burnt out of. So I'm very familiar with Watts and Compton. And African-American men are not stepping up to the plate, and they have never understood that a job is not enough. And they think that for them to be on these jobs and they just lower their heads and they're willing to be degraded for a pension, and they're playing the game. You know, I play the yes a boss, but when I get home, I talk mess all night long. But they, when I talk to men, they say, you know, I'm playing the game, so I'm ahead. So why don't you open a business? Oh, I know how to work the system. But no, the system is working you. And until you have a business, until you are an entrepreneur, until you are making your own way, you are still within the system. But you're being delusional about it, because when you get 65 or 67, you know, and you've been on your job 25 to 30 years, you're going to get X amount of dollars, not understanding by the time you reach 65 and 67, that little money that you thought was going to be enough is not enough. Because our senior citizens are out here eating cat food and dog food and getting in lines to get extra food. You know, I saw my mother do that. She didn't have enough to retire on. And all those promises of Social Security and retirement went down the drain.
The Grown and Sexy. That sounds like some Japanese mess. The Japanese are pretty good about making up gangs with outrageous names. There really is a gang called the Grown and Sexy. I mean,
I'm sorry. It's Sexy Cash Money. That's the name of it. Sexy Cash and Money.
Okay, that's good enough. Because I was about to say, Justin Timberlake got a squad now? Really?
Yeah.
Is this how far it's gone? And that's not any better, by the way. Sexy Cash Money, that's not any better. That's not any better, by the way. I think Grown and Sexy sounds a little more dangerous to me. Let me get... Now, is this Afro on the line?
Yes.
Okay, Afro, brother. Let me find out here. Now, you were in the chat room telling us the story about a fella talking to a police officer here. Now, if you're on speaker, you may want to take it off so we can hear you better. But I want to find out exactly what is it you're referring to in that story, because I'm trying to see if I read that correctly or if my humpty eyes deceived me.
Well, no, what I was illustrating there was there was a comment made in the chat room earlier that there's so many brothers chasing white women out in that area. And I come from the near Cleveland area, and you may see that, but it's not something you see real prevalent. I went out there right to the Detroit Jazz Festival, which is right on the water, which is only like 10 blocks away from 8 Mile, and that's like where everybody congregates around Labor Day, because that's where all the festivals, all the music's at. And it was like every dark-skinned brother had a white girl that they was campaigning with, and they all looked like garbage. And I was like, are you kidding me? And my father had no black stance about things, so he got angry and offended. I'm like, Pop, they're going to do what they're going to do. You got me right. You can't get all of them right. So he said, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show something. So it was this officer. She was in her 40s or whatever. And he was like, you know what? And she looked good. And she was being nice to everybody. You know, she was just there, just basically the extra paycheck, basically. Long story short, he started having a casual conversation with her, you know, just you know, because she looked like she was, like, drag-hating what she was doing, because, Everybody was just ignoring her and basically just treating her like garbage, you know, and a lot of the black females there had that same problem. So he went over to her, started talking to her, about an hour in the conversation, she asked him, okay, where you live at? Where are you from? You're not from this area. You ever thought about coming to Detroit? Yeah. Oh, I got a son, but he out the house now. It's just my house now. I got room. You want to come in? I'm like, are you serious? That's how bad how much disunity there is up in Detroit. That's what I was trying to illustrate.
Now, did you say he was talking to a police officer, though? Because I saw you had said something about that.
Yes.
Okay, now I just want to make sure I have this straight now, okay? So are you saying that was your father?
No, that was who I was with. That was not my father. I call him dad because he was a big influence in my life, but it was not my real father.
Okay, let's be straight about that because you don't want that on the stenographer's record, so don't do that. But you're saying he was pro-black till he met a white female police officer.
No. I'm saying he was pro-black, and when we went to the festival, all the brothers there, most of them had white women that were trashy with them. He got offended, and he saw how all the sisters was getting slighted. Nobody was giving them any attention. Nobody was even giving the ones who obviously had their stuff together. So he saw her as a black officer and started talking to her. She was black.
I think what he's trying to say is that really black men are not checking for black women anymore. And I could give you an example. You can go out, and they will not talk to you. They will not acknowledge you. They will ask you to give them a drink. They're not checking for black women. I came from Compton, and I came to Riverside, California, which is probably about 30 minutes from Moreno Valley. And I never saw interracial couples until I came out here. And the black men would not even look at you. They would not acknowledge you. And he's absolutely correct. They are with the lowest of the low of white women. If you're going to get a white woman, get a bad one. Give me something to be jealous of while you turn your nose up at me, your sister. So I think that's what he's trying to say. It is off the chain. It is.
Well, yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Broke bumminess is at epic proportions right now. I mean, they're looking for a female to be their mama, not a female who's going to be, you know, their mate. So, yeah, I mean, if we're using broke bumminess as the gauge, it's going to be rough out there, man. There's nothing going on. I mean, you're not talking. Look, the point is that those were not on point, brothers. Those fellas were not building nothing. They don't have anything. The guys who are doing the mess, they don't have nothing. They're not building anything. They don't have anything. They're not doing anything. They don't own anything. They don't control anything. They're just hanging out at the damn park. What makes you think, I mean, those are white women who can't get nothing better. If she could, she would be with a white man, but she doesn't qualify for one. So what you really saw, those weren't black males, those were dusty males. Those were dusty, broke, bummy. Unfortunately, when you go to a place like Detroit, they might as well call it Dustroit. Because that's what you got going on right now. It's dustiness is the culture.
Yeah.
Being black male culture in Detroit is dusty culture, is broke culture. So they go, they don't mind being some white female's toy for a few months. Because what they realize is that with a black female, at some point, she is going to expect you to actually do something and produce something. At some point, she's going to. A white female is not looking for a black male to produce nothing.
And I guess TV, what shot me so bad was, as I observed the situation, I'm like, wait a minute. Y'all picking women outside your culture, one. Two, that ain't got nothing. I mean, I hear the comments in the room say they were fat women. No, these were crack whores. Okay, fat would mean they actually have money to buy food. These were crack whores on steroids. And I'm looking like, these dudes checking for these girls, and they hold them like they didn't do something. And they look to me funny while I looked at them funny. I'm like, because I'm like, I'm not from around here. I ain't used to this.
Well, you know what? The problem is that when you have an ambitious culture with unambitious males being your unambitious leaders, that's what you end up with. they are, as I said in my video about black males simping for sex, the problem is that today they have elevated vaginas to a sex symbol. I mean, to a status symbol. As long as it's a female with a vagina, that's it. I'm not looking for a woman to take care of me. And that's why my perspective on all that is different. But if you are going to go to a broke, dusty capital of America, that's what you're going to see. And the problem is, as Mona has found out here at the Black Channel, since she started joining us and listening to me, California, we can positively identify that as a broke, bummy, dusty capital now. The whole damn state. The whole damn state of California, you can just write it off. You got a few on-point fellas there, but that's it. Otherwise, that whole state, you can just write it off. California is Detroit with a beach. Those are concerned. It's Detroit with a beach. There's no building going in California where black men are concerned. There is no challenging the white establishment for power. So what we need is to start, what we're doing right here is to start a movement that that says, you know what, for the 21st century, black male culture is going to be about overlord. It's going to be about what we own and control. But first, that begins with, you know, media for that kind of thing. And it's going to be risque. I can't be the only one, but it's going to be risque. It's going to be a little risky. It's going to be us saying things that make people uncomfortable. It is. It's going to be a situation where we are going to be required to tell people some things they otherwise do not want to hear. We're going to be required to start pointing these things out. You see, nobody is pointing out. All they see is that there were white women. But is anybody analyzing, A, the quality of the men, B, the quality of the females? Is anybody actually taking a realistic look at this? Because the media is not going to do that. Why don't we take a look at these females and see, are these females that white men would challenge you for? Or are these just white females and you are calling that a status symbol? Because you see, as I said about Mr. Trick Coon Trick Trick up there in Detroit, dude, you call that power. Ain't no white folk challenging you for that. Therefore, I don't consider it power because nobody of any substance is challenging you for it. I don't consider those females worthy because nobody's challenging them for it. And they know that. So what we really need to combat here, let's separate it and understand exactly what we're seeing here. That is not black male culture. We are black male culture. That is dusty nigga culture. And in the 21st century, we're taking the game back over. Now, first case in point, Afro, I need for you to send me a message on Facebook because I don't have you under Jason Black anymore. As you know, okay. Facebook, Deep Six, my Jason Black account. So I don't have you under that anymore. Send me a message because for those of you who don't know, for those of you who contributed to 7 a.m., I started a group, Intelligent Black Society. And for those of you who contributed to 7 a.m., we will verify that you paid. And once we verify that, we want to make you members of Intelligent Black Society. And this is a closed group. I might open it in the future for other people. It just depends. But right now, it's going to be open strictly just for those who actually contributed to 7 a.m. The people who show us they're actually willing to put some skin in the game, those are the people that it's open to right now. But I want you to send me a message so that I'll have you under my contacts on under Black Authority. And because I definitely want you in the book because this is where serious discussions are going down. And definitely your credentials and everything, I want to make sure that you're able to chop up game with some of these younger fellows who got questions about that kind of stuff.
I'm already in there under my legal first name, Marty.
Okay. Just so you be aware, because you've probably seen that they've been asking some questions that deal with your expertise.
Yeah, I've been getting quite a few questions, especially about the EMC VMware stuff, and I'm getting with them because I just did a draft of a video series I'm going to do, which explains everything we talked about in PowerPoint. It's about an hour and a half to go through it. And as I'm sitting here now, I'm putting a couple of them got me with their mail addresses. I'm putting together envelopes and getting copies put in the mail tomorrow.
See, we're not bull jiving around here. It's more having to filter through, are these guys serious or they're not. I got young fellas on the team. In this group, you know that they paid money to get in, so they money tells us what you believe in. See, them dusty niggas, they don't believe in white women because they're not paying for it. They believe in whatever female is going to take care of them like a big-ass baby. What you spend your money that you've earned on, that's what you believe in. They believe in tennis shoes. They don't believe in empowerment. These are young men who paid. These are young men who paid their dues. They put skin in the game. They are serious about this. So you know that they've been pre-vetted. In other words, you're not wasting your time. This is how you do it. Do you all want to know where the rebuilding of black society begins? It begins here. This is where it begins. This is how you do it. This is how you make it happen. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Black first as always, Jason. I'm going back and get this thing taken care of and get these addresses out. And anyone, Afro in the room, if you fit in the information I presented a couple weeks ago about getting certified and stepping your money game up, shoot me a private message and give me your mailing address, and I'll put a copy in the mail for you. Don't even worry about it.
Thank you very much for joining us here tonight, brother. Please do call us again here. Let me get telephone caller from 216. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, how you doing?
What's your name? Where you calling from?
This is B from Cleveland. Hey, it's funny you said this topic, man. I got a son. He's 28. That's all he messed with is dusty white women. Come here, Dion. They won't talk to you. Yeah, man. So I get on him about it, man. I don't understand it and stuff, but that's his thing. Yeah, but other topic I want to talk to is, you know, he's talking about Detroit and everything, and I'm here in Cleveland, man, and this, they got a different type of racism. It's a silent racism. You know, they ain't going to let you be no manager or none of that, so, you know. And I have had my own businesses before. Started young, had a business, and, you know, it's not enough of it. And I just had a conversation with somebody yesterday. And they was talking about, yeah, got some black person to take care of this, and that's what you get for having black people take your, be in business with black people. It's sickening, you know. And what's
okay,
funny,
brother,
when
now,
I started.
I want to make sure everybody hears what you're saying, but you got a cafe going on behind you back there.
I know, man. It's busy at my house.
A quiet area so people can hear you because they're not able to make out what you're saying.
Hey, I apologize, Jason, but I listened to your show, man. I wanted to tell you, man, keep kicking that tough love, man. I love
now,
you for that.
How old is your son?
What's that again? I'm sorry.
How old is your son?
My son is 28.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is he living on his own?
No, man. No, that's a whole difference. That's a whole different story, you know, man. I talk to him blue in the face.
Is yes or no? Is he on his own?
No.
Okay. That's why he's
me and my wife.
Yeah, that's why he's got a taste for the kind of women that he does.
Yeah.
And it's not that he's in love with white women. He's just in love with any woman who will take care of him. And a black male is a woman desires security. White women already have financial security. Now they want emotional security. A black male is much easier to subdue for emotional security. He can be perfectly controlled, especially if he's unambitious and ain't got nothing going for himself. So what you do then is that, hell, he's not going to go anywhere. He's not going to revolt. He's not going to do anything. I mean, what else can he do? You're the best thing that ever happened to him. So,
yeah, he just want another mama. That's all.
Yeah. But the flip side of that is, who raised him to be like that, though?
His mama.
Now you checked out of that one. Now you're his dad, so are you sure?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, it's kind of things is my fault. Because a lot of times I worked third shift, and when they was growing up, I only seen them on the weekend, and when they was asleep, when they were kids, you know what I mean? But, you know, I had to do to bring, put food on the table, you know what I'm saying?
Now, were you married to his mother?
Oh, yeah, we've been married, man. Shit, been together almost 30 years.
Real quiet. She must be sitting right on top of him, too. Yeah, we've been married 30 years.
Oh, yeah, she's right next to me.
I'm about to say, I ain't trying to divorce court, so okay, I'm not going to get you there, but what I am going to say is that a boy takes after his father mostly. I'll agree with you on a lot. I'm not going to put that at the feet of his mother, though. If you were there, I got to put that at your feet. Because at the end of the day, you are the man, and you are the leader of your household. And if you are not the leader of your household, I can't put that on a woman. Especially if you say you were the breadwinner, I can't put that on her. Just real talk, man. I can't do it. Nobody wants to take responsibility for this tar baby, and I understand that. But real talk, man.
Oh, yeah. I take full responsibility, you know. But
at this point in his life now, it's time for some tough love on that end there right there. This Negro might be fortunate at your house.
Well, you know, it's his situation is
has
a
she
little
gotten that
different.
Girl pregnant?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Is he a father?
No, he's not. No.
Oh, he's not yet? Okay.
No. Not at all. But this guy, man. Yeah, my son, he has a different dusty white girl every week. You know, that's his thing. It's sickening.
He's a man is as ambitious as his options.
Yeah.
So he figures they're a status symbol, and, man, I got one. You know, it's not like these brothers who drive those beat-up cars, you know. When I was in high school, having an 81 old Cutlass, man, that was the car to have. You still got people today who think an 81 old Cutlass is the car to have. Now they've kind of moved up to the 89 Caprices and whatnot, and the 94 Caprices. And like that car is 20 years old, man. 20 years old. And yet they clean it up, they paint it, they put chrome kits on it. Man, you're putting a chrome kit on a 22-year-old car.
So that's a good analogy.
They're trying to spit, polish, vomit is what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to step his game up, man. He's got to step his game up.
Mm. But the main topic I want to talk about, I knew y'all was talking about that earlier, but, you know, the main topic I want to talk about how things is in the black neighborhood, man. I remember, you know, coming up, you had a lot of black businesses. And what was happening is... you know, you had a black store owner on this side of the corner and an Arab owner on this side of the corner. The fucking Arab owner will pay some crackhead to shoot and rob the other black owner's store. Who going to get robbed first? You know, that type of thing. And, you know, I've seen a lot of black businesses go when people sell out. And, you know, they get their money, they move down south. And, you know, up north, man, is dead. So... you know.
No, in the
crazy.
North, up there in that Detroit area, Ohio. Look,
oh, yeah, man, it's terrible.
Cleveland is over. Cincinnati is over. I've been getting Dusty Negro reports out of Cleveland now for 10 years, man. Cleveland is over. Ain't got nothing popping. Cincinnati is over. Nothing's popping for black males, black people there right now. And really... in the past either. It's been squandered, man. After they get done with Detroit, that is going to be a model and a template for how they're going to run y'all out of Cleveland.
Yeah, and the society is just getting dumber and dumber. I was a kid, and, you know, people used to call me, I was somewhat a nerd because I liked it knowledge, man. I like to know shit. I like to be on top of the knowledge. You know, people always want to talk about dumb shit. Who better? Kobe or LeBron. Man, talk about something else. Mae Jameson. You know what I mean? The astronauts and fucking black people in science really doing stuff. You know, the names that just go on and on. You know, people don't understand it. You know, if that it was a black dude, my name don't come to me right now, who built the engines for the space shuttle. You know, let's talk about that. You know?
Well, but in order to take interest in a space shuttle, you have to actually have interest in building one. And right now, they've been reduced to just black males as a group. And I'm beating up on the males tonight because we're supposed to be leaders. Black males as a group have been reduced to worshiping basic necessities. They worship their shoes. Well, what's that? Clothing. They worship sex. Sex is a basic biologic function, and black males are so devoid of power and purpose right now that we've elevated it to a divine level. And that's why all these hotep Negroes online and everything are always talking about sex all the damn time, because he hasn't built anything. Sex was built for you. Those shoes were built for you. Engines for the space shuttle, that's something you got to build yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But I don't think a lot of people realize how much black inventors have shaped America. You know, they think the white people built everything. You know, unfortunately, it was blacks working through white agencies.
Here's the problem. The problem is that we don't even need black inventors anymore. All we need are black men who are willing to buy out the businesses that are there. The shoe has been around for, what, 6,000 years? Michael Jordan is making billions for Nike over the last 30 years, and he just became worth $1 billion, scrapping and scraping to get a higher ownership stake of the Bobcats here last week. So you've already made billions for other people in shoes, but you never thought to do it for yourself. You never even tried to do it on your own terms. So, you know, I'm looking beyond just inventing. Hell, we didn't invent records or CDs, but we invented the most popular music in the world, hip-hop and R&B and rap, and yet we don't even control that. So, I mean, beyond just inventing things, the stuff we got now, we're not even trying to hold on to what we already have primacy over.
Yeah, and there's stuff that we invented. It's just like a black woman invented the laser eye surgery. You know, black people don't think about that. And so we as a group, you know, we need to have an industry that we're strong in. You know, I heard this one white guy just saying not too long ago, it's not enough black Americans in the tech industry, you know, to have their own company, rather, you know, in the tech industry. And that's what we need, man. Science is definitely the future. It's no getting past that.
Yeah. That's because we want to be consumers. You see, you cannot take over an industry when your concern is – you can't build iPhones when your concern is buying an iPhone. You can either buy it or you can build it, but you can't do both. The whites and the Asians said, I'll build it. Black folks are good, so I can go ahead and buy it now. I was talking to a caller last night. Well, I was talking to a caller last night about the situation in California. In California, you got the Filipinos. You're talking about owning the industry? I was talking to him last night about how the Filipinos, especially the Filipino females, they have basically taken over the nursing field in California out there. They basically taken over. Now, that didn't take 30 years for it to happen. And what you're saying about there should be an industry that we own. There should be an industry that you should be scared to death to upset black men over, because we will push you out and keep you out. And we can show you where Filipino women can do that to you in medicine in California. You can't show me one single – when Filipino women have more power, wealth, and influence than black males in a place, that tells you how pitiful and pushing is.
Yeah. But, I mean, we have no, like, real power base where we have, that we can use for political power. You know, and that's what we need. So, look, the whole United States, what, is 40 million black people? We don't have one dominant, one little city. One little city.
Yes, we do.
What's that?
Brother, we got Detroit, D.C. We have majority black cities. We just don't own nothing there. Look, in Detroit right now, what I was saying at the beginning of the broadcast is that right now they're getting ready to shut off thousands of people's water because they haven't paid, and we've got activist groups out of Canada.
I've seen the documentary on that,
Well, they got groups out of Canada coming down here to petition the UN to tell the city of Detroit not to turn these people's water off. Black people are 80% of the population of Detroit and can't even force the city to make them keep the water on. General Motors is one company and got the United States government to give them $50 billion, and now they just had to recall 20 million cars for defects. But black folk in Detroit cannot get 80% of the population and cannot get the city or the state to do anything on their behalf.
Mm.
So it's not a matter of having numbers anymore, brother. We don't have the will to even do anything. It's not even about money anymore, to be totally honest. How can you help somebody who lacks the will? Yeah, where is the willpower to take over?
Well, you know, it really with black Americans, it's all about assimilation. You know, when I was growing up, it was, you know, go to school and get a good job. You know, not get your own business. I was going, you know, my father, he owned his own business, right? And that's where I got it from, to get my own business and do my thing, you know. And these people, they don't play fair, man. The dominant society, they don't play fair, man. I know my mother, she was a senior account underwriter for an insurance company, built the company. For her to retire and get her lump sum, she had to get to retire. She had to sign a statement saying that she won't go in business for herself. What kind of shit is that? From some old Jewish motherfucker who she trusted.
That's called a non-compete.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's called a non-compete. Now, she can challenge it in court if she can afford to challenge it.
Oh, she's retired in Florida.
That's a point right there is that she could challenge it in court if, because non-compete's really in most states, especially if you're in a right-to-work state. Non-compete, yeah. For a matter of fact, I mean, and that's something that they're talking about right now. Hell, they've moved non-competes down to, like, hairstylists now, by the way.
Mm.
Hairstylists and summer camp directors. So, like I say, it's a non-compete. But in any case, you know, the killing thing about it is your mom shouldn't need that. As black folk, we should have our own telephone companies. White folk are doing that. Just when you thought that you couldn't do anything more on the internet, here comes Google. Let me ask you a question right here. Now, what are the top two cities in America, New York and Los Angeles? Kanye West is wasting his damn life trying to sit up here and start clothing line because Negroes want to be homo thugs. He's wasting his damn life trying to start a clothing line, something that the probability of failure is outrageously high. Why don't you go for something where the probability of success is a little more in your favor, you know, like internet company. Everybody's got complaints about that. Magic Johnson had no problem telling people that he was going to see about getting $1 billion together to try to buy the Los Angeles Clippers from Donald Sterling when it looked like Sterling was on the ropes. Okay, Magic, if you were able to get together $1 billion for a damn basketball team, can't you get together $1 billion to start a fiber optic company so that we can have fast internet in San Francisco or Los Angeles? Did you play for the Lakers?
He could have gave that $1 billion to Umar Johnson for a school, man.
Well, I'm talking about for like a business enterprise, though. We can invest in the fiber optic school, and we can buy all the schools we want. I mean, the fiber optic company can buy all the schools we want after that point. Let's wire up one major American city, because that's what Google did. Google just said, we're going to wire up one major American city. Now, Google took it beyond that, because Goldman Sachs had issued a report that, by their estimation, it would cost about $140 billion for a brand new company to wire up the entire United States for fiber optic internet. So older companies like Comcast and AT&T, who had nationwide telecommunication networks a long time ago, they got a bit of an advantage in that respect. But guess how Google is maneuvering around that? Google is maneuvering around that by giving the option to new customers that if you are willing to pay $300 to wire up your house for Google Fiber, that you can get it for free for life.
Wow.
So in other words, the customers are going to subsidize their own services. Now, what I'm saying is, if Magic's got $1 billion, if he can get $1 billion in finance, why are you or Kanye or Jay-Z, why are we talking about all this damn stuff? Man, basketball teams was an 80s thing, man. There's big money being made out here, and y'all aren't trying to get any of that. You're still sitting up here trying to be rappers and basketball players.
Yeah,
and you're
fashionistas. And, I mean, that's just how far their mind thinks, man. I mean, just because they got money don't mean they're smart. Look at Donald Sterling, you know, he kind of business savvy, but I can't say he's a genius just because he got $1 billion.
No, he's not a genius because he got $1 billion. He's a genius because he had $1 billion before he even bought the Clippers. He's a genius because he had power and wealth before he got there. And a team that he bought for $12 million 30 years ago, he just sold it for $2 billion.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you calculate that return on investment.
And the killing part, they're not going to let no blacks be no major shareholders, because that's, they feel that's their thing, you know. Even in NAACP, that's owned by Jewish people, just Jewish control.
Well, it was started by non-black people, but show me a black person who has invested in something and 30 years later they got a 10,000% return on investment.
Not a one. Not without missing one of your peoples.
Yeah, his return on investment is not measured in percent. It's measured in thousands at this point. And what I'm saying is that we've got the money. We just don't have the will as a people. And what I'm saying is that we need to start politicking. We need to start politicking on people who do have that stuff. First of all, we need to hold ourselves accountable as individuals. You got your business. I got mine. Mona's got hers. This is a place where people like us need to be together. But at the same time, we need to start checking everybody. Everybody's on the table. We need to check the rappers, the athletes, the business people, the media people. We need to start checking everybody and saying, y'all got to be on board, or you can't do business here. See, Miss Trick Trick Coon Trick in Detroit, I'm just showing you, this is how it's done. We need to let them all know that you can't do business here if you're not going to do business in our interest. That's what the Italians did with their people in Chicago and Detroit. That's basically what they're doing. They said, this is what you have to do. You are going to do business our way with the agents in Chinatown. They tell you, if you're going to do business here, you got to do it our way, to our benefit. We need to start telling our people the same thing.
Now tell me, Jason, I know you know this number. The amount that black people spend annually on goods and services, just being a consumer, what is that number? It's got to be up in the
Right now, black people have a $1.2 trillion economy, expected to be somewhere around $1.5 trillion here in the next few years. Here is the problem. Even at that, you're dealing in the world of between $250 to $300 trillion of global wealth. So if you take the high end of that number, and a lot of it has been liquidated since the subprime mortgage crisis, but if you take the high end of that $300 trillion, black people own less than one half of 1% of the world's wealth.
Before you let him go, I want to ask a question.
Oh, sure.
And my question to you, sir, is you say your son is 28 years old and he comes from a two-parent household?
Yes.
Okay, so this is my question. If your father was a businessman, he passed that on to you, can you explain to our listening audience what happened that you didn't pass it on to him, or he wouldn't accept
how can I put this delicately?
Delicate don't mean
very. Listen. My son was born a preemie, and he was born a twin, and he almost died in one of them deals, and his sister died, and he made it, and we thought he was gonna lose him, but he made it, so. You just figure it out from there. So, you know, he's a special needs child, grew up special needs child.
Okay.
Well, like I say, in this case here, that would give me even more motivation, to be totally honest with you. That would give me even more.
Yes, because my son is also 28, and he is also a pretty 1 pound, 14 ounces. And I'm a single mother, so I was just trying to, you know, maybe get some information, you know, of the different dynamics between single motherhood and the family unit, and why he did not follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, because he's going to need that. If he really is special needs, he's going to need that more than anything, because that's probably going to be the only thing he's going to have, especially they're kicking in adult social Darwinism right now. So, I mean, that will probably be the only thing he actually will have. But thank you very much for giving us a call here, brother. Please do give us a call again. We're coming up here on the end of the broadcast, but I got a few calls sitting on the line. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can. We got about an hour, 30 minutes left here. Let me get caller from 313. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Yes, what's going on, Jason? This is Vaughn from Detroit. Apparently, Detroit's a hot top tonight. I'm going to call from the front lines then. Let me say this. I think I heard Professor Truth say this, that for us to, I might misquote him, so don't hold me to the fire, but he said 50% of us will have to be killed off if we're to move forward. And that number might be kind of high, but I understand where he was coming from with that. You know, what's going on in Detroit, I saw it was coming 10, 12 years ago. And I tried to explain to folks, hey, something's coming because the city is emptying out. Yeah, it started with the white middle class. Then the white poor class. But then it went to black middle class. I'm like, whoa, if the black middle class is leaving, there's nobody to fill these houses. And it's hard, if you have not seen it, it's hard to get a feel for how bad Detroit is. And I always give people an idea. Someone said the best example is in Ukraine where the nuclear plant blew up and they had to clear the entire area out. So they got entire cities gone where there used to be a city of 50,000 people. They had to move them all out and left a city of 50,000 there. That's what Detroit looked like. And I guess if you're not from here, you have to see it to believe it. Well, the black middle class moved out, the tax base moved out, and it sunk lower and lower. But no one seemed to care or made an effort to stop it or change it or keep them here. And when the middle class left, black people, well, actually, they was feeding on each other, feeding in the sense.
Okay. Let me get you to out of the room because I want everybody to be able to make out what you're saying. And you're kind of competing with Marvin Gaye back there right now.
That right, me in that. Okay. The tax base left. What was remained inside the city was the poor and the middle class poor, I guess you would call them. And they fed on each other. They fed on each other by selling each other drugs. They fed on each other by robbing and breaking each other's houses. They fed on each other by taking their grievance with each other to a gun and killing each other. So when you have this feeding of the individuals, they killed each other off and went to jail for each other. So if I kill this guy, I have an argument, then he's dead, then the guy who did it goes to jail, and the guy who knew about it or helped him hide went to jail. And it just festered. You know, we got a city that has about, maybe just under 400 murders a year. And even if you just find out half of those, that's 400 people dead, and at least 200 to 300 people going to jail for, 10 or 12, 20 years. So you got that going on, and it's just constantly festered and festered year after year after year, the drugs. And, not to mention the high STDs, so high AIDS, high herpes, high gonorrhea. I mean, it just festered, man, to where about 10 years ago, we had a population, maybe at least a million. Now we're under 680,000.
Oh, it's actually, if you're talking about Detroit, it's actually close to 700,000. It's actually between 700 and 720. Are you referring to Detroit or?
Right. Well, they just did. It was 713,000 at the last census. They just did another estimate by the Census Bureau. Now they're estimating.
It's by the next census, I expect Detroit to be south of 600,000. By the next.
I expect it too.
But here's the real question I got for you now about my questions I was asking earlier. In Detroit, can they take your property if you don't pay, if the water bill goes delinquent for too long? Can they take your, if you own your house and you owe the city for an for a water bill, aren't they able to possess your property?
I don't know about that. I've never heard that. What they've been doing is taking the power line down from the to the house to the pole.
Oh, really?
That's a big market of illegal hookups. So they come in, turn your power off. Well, somebody, if you live in the city of Detroit, you're going to know somebody who knows somebody on how to hook it back up. So somebody contact like they're hook it back up. Someone, the neighbors tell The electric company is called DTE. Has a partnership with the police department, so they have security police organization going on. So that unit, someone calls that DDT, that unit investigate, and eventually they're going to either charge the people who stay there, or they're going to take the line down from the house to the pole. So you have nothing, and that's. But I'm not.
Now, you know where that tactic comes from, don't you?
No, I'm not from, no, where it
comes
from.
Now, most of you don't know where that tactic comes from. I do, because I've worked for the largest telecommunication companies in this country. And if you'll all remember, that is cable TV tactic. We call it taking the line down. And how you used to stop people back in the old analog days before they went to digital is that people who would try to steal cable, we made sure they couldn't keep stealing it because we sent technicians out. First, we would stop your signal, and next, to keep them from getting the analog, we would send a technician out to go take the line down. Now, with digital cable, that's not even necessary anymore. If you don't have a digital box that is formatted for connection, because it's all over an internet protocol now, you can't get any signal at all. But that taking the line down thing, that was something that was pioneered by the cable companies. And I know because I was one of those people who made sure that if you did not pay us, I was one of the people who would send people out to come take your line down. So that's how I know about those kind of things. So the only thing that surprises me about that, brother, is that the electric company was not doing it 20 years ago. That's the only thing that surprises me. What took you so long? And now it's going to be a hell of a thing because now, like in places like Denver, and places like that, they've got places now where they're rewiring but they're doing computer hookups for the water meters. Now, these are massive, expensive undertakings, but they're doing computerized taps for the water meters now. All these people who go out there and break the locks off the water meters and stuff, they've got it now where they're just reformatting the cities to have computerized locks on them now.
Well,
wait till that kicks off.
Let me say this too. I didn't even really. The local media hasn't really talked about the water issue. I only found out about it.
Why not? Shouldn't the local media be blowing up about this? Shouldn't this be the story in Detroit right now?
Yeah, but it's corporate media, so. The people in charge don't live in the city, and they are part of the agenda to make the change. I only discovered it because people have been posting information on the internet, and that's how I heard about it. I didn't know what was going on. It's not a topic here. And then when you mentioned about somebody's going to the UN to protest it, that just blew me away. I haven't heard anything about that I haven't heard it on our local talk radio, and they normally. You know, on top of those things, but it's a new day. The last current mayor and the last mayor were not City of Detroit's residents. They literally moved in the city. They established residency here just enough to be declared citizens, and they ran for mayor. They moved in a year prior to coming in to being considered a citizen. And
so
that's how, yeah. But the people of Detroit let them do that because there's no leadership, and the black men and the black people in general here have lost so much faith. They pretty much don't take part in the elected officials, elected office. So they're just pretty much, and they're so desperate for leadership. They're looking not within but without now. And, I guess you get what you pay for. So that's a real price to pay. You know,
well,
the people who.
Michael's demand? Professor Black Truth made his video, We're All Detroiters Now, almost 5 years ago. Where is the black demand in Detroit something better? Where is the black demand in Detroit? Where are black people demanding real leadership that is actually going to benefit them? Where, if you're going to sit up here and have an initiative to bring immigrants into the damn country and bring them to Detroit, why is it black people are not saying, no, Governor Snyder, no, Ron Duggan, you are not going to bring immigrants here. You are going to take whatever money you've got for that, and you're going to go take out some loans, and you are going to help us build a black business enclave here in Detroit that is not dependent upon General Motors and manufacturing, something that's going to be dependent upon more tech things and whatnot. And we're going to have a new Motown that serves black people's interests. Why is it black people are not saying that from the grassroots, that you're going to do this or your behind is not going to be reelected? Why is that not coming from the grassroots?
Well, the grassroots is probably, you know, the intelligent folks who are part of the grassroots. They're speaking it. However, the intelligent people need the masses, and the masses are very defeated people. They, you know, it's like invading Iraq. When you invade Iraq, you take out the leaders and you left the people. Well, the people aren't capable of forming organizations on their own to counteract whatever's going on outside the borders, and they're just waiting. They're accepting what's coming at them, and then just going from there. I mean, they tried for the longest. 13 years ago, the state came in, took over the public schools, and there was a large outcry. When they came and took over the public schools, there was 140 Detroit public schools. There's now 36, and the state is talking about closing 26. I don't know how still with a city over 500,000 people can have 26 public schools. So, but they've been.
Did you know they have a similar initiative going on right now in Philadelphia?
No, I didn't
know
that.
Most people don't know that they've got a similar initiative in Philadelphia to close a bunch of the schools there. That's why Umar Johnson is up in arms and running around doing as much as he possibly can right now. And because, I mean, when I went and talked to him right before I went to go, or I talked to him a while before I went to go and talk to, I talked to Umar Johnson in Philadelphia. And then I went to go to Shalimar Blakely, the executive director of the African American Chamber of Commerce for Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Delaware. Try saying that three times fast. Anyway, but both of them had the same story about the schools. Now, her take on it a little bit different from Umar's, but the concern is still the same, is what do we do? Because you all are talking about closing these schools, and then what? And Umar's question was that you want to close these schools and have these charter schools and whatnot, but what's going to happen to the black students who get kicked out of the charter schools? Where are they going to go? And he was like, nobody has ever answered that question for him, that if there are public schools and the charter school won't take them, then what do we do with them? What happens with them? And Umar is saying that nobody's ever given him an answer, which basically leads him to the conclusion that you just won't be going to school.
Yeah, you'll be going to eventually a prison where someone will make money off you because they're going to privatize the prisons too. And that's the plan. They're going to... For those who cause all the trouble, they're going to let them hit the streets. And like Dr. Anderson said, there's only three places you can go, a job, welfare, or prison. And when you don't have those first two, you're going to eat one way or the other. If you have to beg or rob, and eventually you will get caught if you rob. And there where you go for the most of your adult life until you're no longer a threat to society. So... You know, that's the plan, and that's how, you know, a certain percentage of us will slowly start fading away, and it boggles me. Like I said before, I told people what was coming, they didn't believe it's here, and they still attitude hasn't changed. So basically, some of us have to fade off for the rest of us to rise from the fiery phoenix and start rebuilding. Again, I said this before, and I said it again. How we not control the hair industry for black hair is disgraceful. And if we can't control that, ask your question is, that's what we need to start getting a control on. We need to start controlling either making a product for black hair or selling the products for black hair, selling that weave everybody keeps wearing, and have some sense. Every store in the city is Korean-owned. So if that's where I believe we need to start at and make some changes.
Well, look, like you said there, you're going to eat one way or the other. And what we in intelligent black society, we can win this thing, but we have to start offering people alternatives. Everybody who's in Detroit, if you got some sense, the few black folk who are left, it is game over as far as the population is concerned. Scrap and grab as much power and wealth as you possibly can at this point, and that's going to be the only way that you're going to even be able to make a stand in the few areas where you are. Maybe you all can regroup in Lansing. Maybe you can regroup in some place like that. But, as I mean, everybody has got to start saying, you know what, it's about power and wealth, because that is the tool and the weapon that they're using against you. If you don't have power and wealth, you are walking into a gunfight, not with a knife, but with nothing. I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, and like you said, we can rebuild where we're at. There's still, there's a large area in the city of Detroit where there's just massive number of vacant houses. The foundations are intact, but it's gutted out, meaning they came in, took the hot water heater, you know, some of the furnace. But you can go and buy your house in the city of Detroit, brick house, for 3 months' pay. Buy it outright, $3,000, $5,000, $6,000. People in Detroit need to stay, buy those properties, fix them up, and rebuild the economy and maintain and hold what you have before it's too late. Because
I disagree with that, and let me tell you why. What you're saying sounds okay in theory. Here's the problem. Remember what you said about the population was emptying out.
Right.
You can't – houses are only good for one thing, living in. That's all you can do in a house. What black folk need to concentrate on are businesses. Having land is what you need, but you need to have a plan and a purpose for that land on how that land is going to generate income. How is that land going to generate power, wealth, and influence? Because right now there's real estate as a housing market in Detroit. That's not going to recover anytime soon. And the reason why that's not going to happen is because, as you said, the population is emptying out. Now, what's going to happen in my prediction and other people's prediction? I predicted this myself. We'll see if I'm right. I believe that the population of Detroit is going to dip down to about 500,000 over the course of the next 10, 20 years. It's going to empty out to around 500,000. Now, when that reaches that critical mass, they're going to have enough immigrants and enough foreign investment in there that they're clearing the houses and they're going to build businesses there. Some will be big, some will be small, some will be strip malls, some will be other things like that. But they will be businesses, because I don't need 1 million people to make a great profit on businesses. But I do need 1 million people if I'm going to keep all these houses here. So what we're going to do is get rid of the houses, tear them down. We're going to build businesses. And that way, all the people, you know, from Ohio and all those other places and stuff like that, and outsiders out in the suburbs of Detroit and whatnot, that's going to be what's going to be coming into Detroit. They're going to come, they're going to deposit their money, and they're going to leave. In other words, emptying out the population will be exactly what we want, because we don't need all those people living here. We just want them to come and deposit their money. And the folk we had here didn't have no money in the first place. So as black folk, what you're saying is right about buying the land, but y'all need to have a plan, and that plan needs to be what everybody else is doing. Them foreigners are not buying those houses and that land to fix them up for the most part. Some of them are stupid enough to do that, but the folks with the real money, they got long-term plans, and they're talking about in all that stuff that Dr. Claude Anderson wanted to do. You're going to see non-black folk coming up in there and doing it now. That's what you're about to see. Everything that Dr. Claude Anderson wanted to do in Detroit, that's what you're about to see the Arabs and the Asians and the Caucasians and the Latinos doing in droves. And that's what y'all need to be geared up on. Dr. Anderson was stopped by Kwame Kilpatrick and Monica Conyers, and now they have inherited the wages of sin. That's what you all need to be dealing with.
It did. Yeah. And last word on this. I also grew up in, first thing, there's a train station in Detroit about the size of Grand Central Station, New York. It's been sitting vacant for 30 years. A billionaire bought it 20 years ago. He's been sitting on it. And, I guess he know what's coming, so that's probably why he buy it. Second thing, I also grew up in Cleveland, particularly East Cleveland. East Cleveland is going to look like Detroit. So if somebody in East Cleveland or Cleveland tell me, what the hell is going on? Is it just the same things going on there as it is in Detroit? Because it's emptying out.
Yes, it is the same thing in Cleveland. It's the same thing in Cincinnati. I've been saying it for years. I've had callers saying for years, man, the situation in Cleveland is no different. The situation in Detroit is the same as the situation in Philadelphia, is the same as the situation in Cleveland. All these old industrial cities that black people got a major toehold in numerically and didn't do nothing with. When I was driving around Philadelphia, I'm seeing an old industrial city that ain't doing nothing anymore. When I was going around D.C., Cleveland is the same thing. Detroit is the same thing. Old industrial cities that have lost their industries, and black folk are just sitting there basically being residents of decay until the new residents are ready. Get that movie Pacific Rim when he said that, you know, they're going to send in the big monsters and first they're going to break you up and then they're going to clear you out. And that's what they're doing right now, is you're basically overseeing, you're basically sitting there and watching these people oversee your extermination. Thank you very much for giving us a call here tonight, Vaughn. Please do give us a call again. He's verified everything he said here tonight, though. Everything that we've been saying here tonight has been absolutely verified and validated. It's the same in Cleveland, Memphis, Nashville, St. Louis, New Orleans, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Detroit. I can go down the list and we can do it however you want to do it. But the result is going to be the same. You have squandered every opportunity that you had for the last 50 years. And now white supremacy is just kicking in the door and taking over the game. Because they had the plan laid out decades ago. And the plan was to wait until housing prices hit rock bottom. And the subprime mortgage crisis was a big bell that went off that said, ding, 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 rock bottom is coming. And now they have slammed into rock bottom, and everybody is scrambling to buy up what they can. And now that there is more that can be gotten, see, that's what people cannot explain to you. There is more wealth to be taken, Mona, more wealth to be gotten in Detroit. And that's why the city is accelerating the clearing out. They're cutting off the water. They're cutting off the essential services. They're cutting off the food stamps in the Section 8. We want to clear everything out now. Everything goes. And now that they are going to clear everything, it's like a person just sweeping their hand across a chessboard, if you will. Oh, the irony. They're just clearing the board now. They're saying, Negroes, we didn't just come to clear out the east side of town or 8 Mile. We came to clear everything. We want a blank slate. And they see the opportunity to turn Detroit into a blank slate, and they are making their move now. They're making their move. Let me get caller from 216. You're on live with the Black Channel.
This is Herb from Cleveland.
Okay, what's the name again?
Herb from Cleveland.
Herb from Cleveland. Well, we were just talking about you.
Yeah.
Was there,
I was
now,
listening.
Before you say anything else, because I've said a lot here tonight, I was the only person who was speaking about Cleveland. We had another caller earlier, though, who had been saying something about it and whatnot when he went to Detroit Festival. But were we telling the truth or were we just making stuff up? Call me on it. If I'm wrong about it, call me on it.
You're telling the truth. Telling the truth is everywhere. And when I was listening to the person that's from Cleveland and some other people telling the story, like I said, the guys that's my age, we've all said the same thing when I told you about a month ago, but pretty much the same story. The thing is that the war is not over, but the thing is, like you said, people don't have the will because we got a lot of, as you call it, dusty people who want to fiddle around while they, like they say, the house is burning. They just want to fiddle around and think they're going to be safe. And there is no safe place because we have a thing here with East Cleveland. They're trying to talk about annexing East Cleveland into Cleveland. And then there's some resistance from Cleveland saying Cleveland don't want East Cleveland. But East Cleveland is under emergency plan. So the thing is, when we talked about businesses, so I told you before, I got together with some brothers. We formed a business coalition, and we decided what we're going to do is we're going to increase businesses by fundraising and getting money together to help people get into business. But the thing is, like I say, you got to have people who have the will to want to be in business because you are right. It's not about houses. You put businesses in your area, you start the commerce, and you can hire people to work. But you're not going to get it done unless, again, you have a business acumen. And truthfully, your documentary is going to be the bullet point that's going to help a lot of us not only to be awakened on the Internet, but when they see it and hear it from experts, they will be accepting and understand we are under siege. And that's where people are just, they're not seeing, they see it, they know something's wrong, but they lack the acumen to want to do something about it. And you've already set the wheels and the alarm already off. And I want to just commend you on this, and the people in the group, this small little group who, through this effort, is doing something. So I'm happy to see that. But, yes, East Cleveland is a dump. Cleveland is fighting for its life. It doesn't matter where we're at. We are under siege. And, you know, the people that – I'm just going to be honest with you. There's a lot of apathy. These politicians have traded people in. I'll give you an example. We had a female federal representative. She passed away. And everybody was talking about appropriations. A friend of mine checked this to see what appropriations money that any black organization got. No black got any appropriation money. And I used to ask the question, I said, did anybody ever approach our representatives to find out what we could do? They never come to us to tell us what we can get from the government. No appropriations. But these hospitals got money. These Jewish organizations got money. But nobody that we had on the list that we saw got any appropriation money. Just when you said something about, I was catching up with some of the broadcasts, because I have a business and I'm very busy myself. You said some teams like the NFL doesn't pay taxes. NFL teams don't pay taxes. We just had our mayor go through this issue, had this thing on the ballot where we're paying a sin tax to the Cleveland Browns, who don't pay, if it's right, they're not paying taxes. And they also got money from a corporation that has the name called First Energy Stadium. And I'm looking at this and I'm saying, wait a minute, NFL is getting me, my money, to pay for not only the upkeep of the stadium, they pay no taxes, and the mayor has, most of these mayors of these cities are giving these sports teams, that's why these guys are billionaires. And yet we can't get $1 million of a slush fund to help, like you're saying, to help us to build businesses in the communities that we're in. Magic Johnson is not sending any kind of money. Like you say, you can build billions of dollars, you get billions of dollars, you can get that kind of money, and yet you won't do any philanthropy to say, build an entrepreneurial businesses in these areas. That's traitorous, and that's all they see. See, they're only thinking about the sports team. We got LeBron James.
Let me explain here. In Dallas, they did that. We know with Jerry Jones and Dallas Stadium, but have you all considered the Dallas Mavericks too, by the way? In Atlanta, Kasim Reed wants to do the same thing for the Falcons, by the way, for those of you who did not know that. And now in Cleveland and whatnot, these people want to own these teams, but they want the taxpayers to foot the bill for the stadium. And now it's no longer stadiums. Jerry Jones set the damn model with that $1 billion. It's a sports entertainment complex is what it is. It's a sports entertainment. It's got a museum and a sleigh ride and a tour. That thing makes money year-round, by the way. That thing makes money year-round. And what's happening is what they're doing for you all there in Cleveland, and Cleveland has always had a rabid fan base, and so basically the NFL is like, hey, just juice this damn thing for what it's worth. Black folk have no problem whatsoever watching that occur for the NFL, but when you try to organize them for reparations, we can give the NFL untold billions. But when we're talking about reparations for something we are owed, all of a sudden, nobody wants to stand up for that. When you are putting white people's interests and best interests ahead of your own, that is the very definition of coonery.
Well, definitely, that's what we have done. And just like you said, remember we mentioned about Kwame Kilpatrick. What did he do? Dr. Claude Anderson was trying to set up a business there. They shut it down. Okay? And that's what these black politicians, you have everything, the more black politicians, he said it right, the more black politicians we had in office, the worse things got for us. And we put these people in office. That's correct. Could you hear me?
Why did things get worse when we had more black politicians? Why?
Well, I'm just saying, they weren't looking out for our interests. They weren't accountable to us because they were bought and paid for.
That is what we're looking for, because your, quote, black politicians were actually front men for white interests.
Absolutely.
They went to your churches and they talked the talk. And to be totally honest with you, they didn't talk the damn talk either, by the way. Barack Obama never mentioned one time what he was going to do for black folk, by the way. And black people voted for him to the tune of 95%. We never had any demands. This is the result of that stupid-ass, ignorant, bastard baby welfare single mother motto of don't judge. Well, we didn't judge the politicians either. And now you can't judge them for selling you out.
The thing is, what you're saying is now, because people say, what do we do? What do we do? The documentary gets in the air. We find like-minded people, which you got throughout the areas. I suggest, brothers, if you want to get into business, form a coalition and pay dues, make them pay, because people can talk. I told guys that's with me, say, if you don't pay dues, you ain't with us. You can't come here and run your mouth and you ain't pay your dues. So we talking about monetary. And we have the thing, we have a set. Each member pays $1,000, you pay $100 a month. And that money stays with the group. You quit, it stays with us, regardless. But it's for fundraising. We're doing things. You have to find people who want to work with you, because the masses of people are not going to do anything. You find the people that want to work with you. There's opportunities. I can't wait for the documentary. I can't wait till some people read Powernomics. Check it out. Read it. And write down what's important to you. And get with those people. And then, like I said, start putting these athletes and entertainers on those. We don't buy your shoes. We're not buying your jackets. We're not supporting your teams. You don't do nothing for us. We need to boycott these people. And just say, even though the white audience is, you know, really the people who go to the stadiums, mostly white anyway. But we don't have to buy Nike shoes. And like my brother said, we don't have to buy the hair care products. Start just telling these sisters, stop. We can put the Koreans out of business in a month. You know, it's time to stop being the seed money for, like I heard before, I think it was Professor Black said, why are we being the seed money for everybody else? We need to stop. So we can. The alarm is already sounding because everybody's talking. This is the only broadcast that is doing this. And like you said, we're sick of the buffoonery. You ain't going to hear Tom Joyner say it, and you're not hearing these other so-called blacks. DL, you're not hearing him say it. He said point blank. He said, I'm an entertainer. Well, you entertain nonsense. It's time for us, like we said. We have a formula. It's just up to us, the small group that's willing to make the change. And that's the only way it's going to get done. It's just a small group. And once we get the ball rolling and get it moved and be steadfast on what we're doing, we'll win. But there's going to be casualties. That's just the way it is. So we're going to take our lumps now. We're going to take their lumps. But now we know what's going on. We know what's happening. As long as we know what's happening, now we can plan and strategize. Like you said, let's get a place where we can talk among ourselves so everybody else don't know what we're doing. And once we have that, then we go on, then we get our marching orders. Like I said, I'm in the battle. I'm in for the fight. I look forward to the fight. Because like I said, a man that got nothing to lose, you know, he's the most dangerous person. I got nothing to lose. That's what I have to say. So I'm just going to say, if you have any other things you can ask me, the truth is Cleveland is in trouble. Pittsburgh is in trouble. Everywhere blacks are, we are in trouble. And we just got to face it. Either you're going to buffoon around, if you think IRs or interracial relationships are going to save you, you're sadly mistaken. Like you said, those compared to who? These are some dusty, rusty, musty Negroes that ain't got nothing going for them. And like I said, and you look at the women, if they ain't looking like nothing, that's not even an issue. They're not the problem. They're nothing but distractions. This gay movement is a distraction. Anybody else marching for somebody else, Hispanics or Asian, that's a distraction. We have to think about us. The Jews are clannish. The Asians are clannish. We have to be clannish. Because they're not looking for interracial. They don't. Interracial couples don't mean nothing to Hispanics. They don't mean nothing to Chinese. They don't mean nothing to Jews. That is just something that we need to stop that and just say, look, we have to move forward. If you want an interracial relationship, then deal with it. I think, truthfully, if somebody's in an interracial relationship, if you're uplifting your people, then they will respect you more. If you tear down your people, then I know what they think about you and what you're thinking about them. So therefore, if you ain't helping the people, you know, if you're not helping, shut up and get out the way. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Caller, please do give us a call again, Herb. I can't add anything to that. As black people, and particularly as black men, we need to adopt a new strategy. The new strategy is think, buy, fight. That is how the Italians and the Irish built theirs, and that's what we need to have. I want to deal with black men who want to think, buy, and fight. Men who think and know what the hell's going on and are going to do something about it. Buy, that means they put their money where their mouth is. And after we got things underway, you're going to fight to protect it. When they went into Iraq, the strategy was clear, hold, build. Well, for black men, it should be think, buy, fight.
I don't think it gets no better than what you said. I just want to add one quick thing. What we have to realize is that white supremacy, they stockpiled on money. When things are cleared out, they can come in there and get things penny on the dollar. We're stockpiling on materialism, and we need to stop that. And we need to have some ambition. Black first.
Brothers and sisters from around the world, there is no place safe to run. There is no safe haven, Detroit, Atlanta, Philadelphia. There is no never, never land awaiting you down in Brazil so you can be as broken dusty as you want to be. You're going to make a choice. You're going to stand and fight here, or you're going to beg and die here, or wherever else you go. You're going to die wherever you're going if you don't decide to stand and fight here. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future. And the future, in case you couldn't tell, is uncompromising.